Welcome to Ellie Chat. Your home for exclusive news and commentary on the internet's only podcast about candlepin bowling. Brought to you by the lords of candlepin, Frank DeLuca and Rich Lamoni. Email the show at alleychat.frankface.net. Now broadcasting from the heart of the Bay State, the host of Alley Chat, Frank Face.
Hey everyone, welcome to Alley Chat. This is Frank Face. I am here with my two co-hosts, Rich Lamoni and Kyle Bruce. We have a very special guest today, World Singles 2013 Knockout Champion, World Record Holder of a high 519 triple. We have, ladies and gentlemen, fresh off the Easter Classic, Mark Ricci.
Thank you.
Welcome, Mark. How's it going?
It's awesome to be here.
Yeah.
It really is cool. You mentioned the 20 stringer. My body's in a whole lot of pain, so I'm glad this chair is very, very comfortable right now. So good, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Maybe you need a very high volume alcohol beer
to
numb your body.
No, that's all right. I still got to drive back to Amesbury later on. So Maki's running on Duncan's tonight.
Amesbury,
so.
The home of Riverwalk Lanes.
Yeah, we can finally say it somewhere. Look at that.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I've been waiting a while to do that.
I was excited when I said Ficos last night, but I was referring to Mike Legender, so it was okay.
Yes, but he still looked at me as if to say, oh, I can't say that. I remember when you said that.
Well, he said as long as it's the accolades of the bowler, it was fine.
Yeah, but he still turned his head a little bit and kind of in a little bit of discouragement. But it is what it is. That's okay. The taping was still amazing. You guys did such a great job behind the desk. It has gotten nothing but better since you come on, Frank.
Thank you.
Having the face on Classic Candlepins has been amazing. You did such a good job with the scoreboard.
I appreciate that.
And then the three of you guys behind the desk has just made the show that much better. It really has.
I appreciate it.
I know this is not me just throwing out a whole bunch of useless compliments and stuff. I really, from the bottom of my heart, mean it, that the show would not be anywhere near as close to as awesome it is without you guys. I know we all work together. But everybody's hearing your three voices together and calling matches and as far as everything else goes. So I can't say enough about you. I can't sing your praises enough.
Well, I can't.
You're getting really good at the cuts. Really good at the cuts.
Thank you. Thank
it,
you.
I noticed it a lot more the last taping that like right on as soon as the ball was this close to the pins, bams, right there. Mm-hmm. And you see the smash and then we can call a shot.
Well, exactly. I mean, those of us who are on this show and who are making it, by the way, Classic Candlepins, subscribe, like, and comment on YouTube.
Yes.
Yeah, I can say that. I don't have to worry about it. Ever since we've gotten, like, as good as we've gotten is it to have the good bowlers on the show and be able to just finally get good at using this equipment, which is by far way beyond anything I ever knew how to use before they put this in front of my face. I mean, I knew how to use a computer very well and all this other stuff, but this is way beyond that. So now you're making the show. Well, I'm making the show. I'm cutting it as we're filming it. And I make my cuts like I would want to watch a show.
Sure.
You know, I didn't have, you know, it's really not that hard when you kind of get down to the brass tacks of what you're actually doing. You're just making a show. And we've all grown up watching candlepin bowling on shows, whether it was the old Channel 5, whether it was Big Shot, you know, going back a little further than our generation, if it was Candlepins for Cash or, you know, the old Sammy White's Channel 5 and then Stars and Strikes, both inclinations of that. We've all watched bowling since we were like, since we could walk.
Yeah. That's so why we're doing what we're doing.
Exactly right. And now we are making it, so we know what it should look like, so we should just make it the way we know what it should look like.
Well, that and the fact that drives all of our significant others crazy. Well, it's a fun way to drive them crazy.
It is. I put mine to work. Yeah. Melissa's one of the camera women.
Yeah, I think Mark's a little bit off the hook, a little bit more off the hook than we are, Rich.
I agree.
But I still have to be nice to her because I have to go home with her every day. Well, so if
but
I
don't, we, you know, we still love our wives as well.
Well, you're supposed to. You better.
Of course.
You better. I just cut to Melissa's camera more often than not so she doesn't yell at me later.
Oh, okay. Well, good to know.
Well, it's a complete lie, but, you know, it's all
right. Hey, hi. How you doing?
Good. Good.
The host of Classic Candlepins, Kyle Bruce.
Wow. I don't know if I'm prepared for that introduction or any of the accolades that has been, I don't know, sent our way by our director.
Podcast be with you. Extraordinaire.
Well, you know, well,
I'll tell you what, on a serious note, I felt like on the pilot, Rich and I were working without a monitor, if memory serves. And yes. I saw on your monitor, Mark, the cuts that you were making, and I could tell then that you got the hang of it. And, you know, we've done four ladders now.
Yep.
We're looking to have our fifth one done May 9. And
that's about right. Yep.
Each time, like, I'm getting better with the stuff I feel like in post and, you know, calling the matches, and we're all getting better. And I'm very proud to be a part of the show, and it is a team effort. And, you know, our crew's going to be growing a bit, so I think that'll make things easier on everybody. And we want to attract the best bowlers really everywhere to come out. We've made subtle changes to attract bowlers. We had Michael Gender, who's got an hour and, what, 40 minutes?
Michael, yeah, he drove for – and you know the funny part is he was just at Riverwalk the night before bowling my Friday night team with John Stana, Jeff Walsh, Steve Plant, Peter Crawford. His team from Norwood was there bowling us Friday night. That crazy dude drove all the way to Amesbury and then all the way back home down somewhere down by Franklin, down in that area, which is seriously like an hour and a half anyway from Amesbury. And then drove back for 9 o'clock in the morning, the very next morning, to be on the first show.
And bowled very well.
And he did bowl well. Yeah, he did bowl very well. He did. The shows were significantly better than they had been on any other episodes. I know the second ladder, I think before this one, was probably the best ladder. And that has nothing to do with that I was on the ladder or anything like that. I felt like it all went much more smoothly than it did the first ladder. The quality of bowling was better in the second ladder. This was our second time going through it. So we were a little bit more accustomed to like how it all worked and where our spots were supposed to be and when who was supposed to be talking and everything else. It all just got better from there. And then we did the ladies ladder. The bowling was tough, but you guys did a great job filling the time in when somebody was waiting for a wood or, you know, throwing another third ball. Like, you guys did very well to fill that time. But then we had this ladder.
Yes.
Then there was this one. I don't have the bass Kyle has to do that, but he could do it better than I could. But it came out so much better in every single regard. We didn't have to fumble with Access's lights anymore. Mm-hmm. Them break, you know, the bulbs popping or something to that effect. I got lights for the bowling alley, screwed them into the ceiling. They're not going anywhere.
Right.
You know, the only thing I'm thinking about is maybe putting a microphone somewhere down, further down, because I'm not really still 100% on how the pins sound on the show. But now,
agreed.
Right. But now we're at least at the point where we're not worried about actual production of the show. Now we're at the point where we're doing little tweaks and, you know, just fine tuning.
Fine tuning, right.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Fine tuning, you know, where guys are sitting or where a camera is positioned or where a microphone might sit or something. If we can add another camera into the mix, people will notice on the third and the fourth shows in the ladder when they air in a couple weeks, we got a brand new feature. We got some picture in picture where indeed, we can yes. show the bowler and then show the pictures coming into it. I learned how to do that right before the match started. Mm-hmm. I was finally made aware how to do it. It wasn't hooked up to the correct camera. I would like it so that it would be so that when you're looking at the bowler, you don't necessarily have to see the pins because that little square will be in the corner. Right. Very much like Stars 50. And Strikes. Yeah. Right. In Nashua. Yes. Very much like that. However, Tony from Amesbury Access has done a phenomenal job.
He
really has. But the only thing that has not so much hindered things, but has been his learning curve is bowling itself. He never watched bowling shows. We have since we could walk.
Of course.
So we know where cameras should be, where things should be, and what the cinematography of the whole thing should be.
Exactly.
Right. And we're trying to find that happy median with what he thinks is a good TV production and what we know is a good bowling show. And we're still just trying to find that, like, that nice fine line in between the whole thing.
Sure.
But we're closer to it than ever before. And you'll notice it in that third show that we do. I'm not giving it away. I'm not going to tell you who's in the show. I'm going to tell you that all four shows were really, really good. And they got better as the day went on. The championship match was a little bit low scoring, but all in all, it was still a really good match all the way down.
So well, both bowlers, whoever they may be, grinded throughout the whole match.
They did.
It was kind of a contest of how much abuse can you take from those pins.
Right.
And,
right.
You know,
how do you stay mental strong?
Exactly. That, you know, big scores doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win a match. You got to stick with it mentally I think that's one of the most important things, along with pinning, which both bowlers did very well.
We had the high single broken not once, but twice.
Yes.
Twice. So that's going to be exciting twice. To see.
By yeah, the same gentleman.
That sucked. I had the high single before that. You said that too. And I'm like, yay, I got something on my own show. And then, yeah, that changed.
Well, you have a championship on your own show.
I do.
Yeah. Along with your mother, many other credits.
I'm at the point now, personally, in my own career, where I have done a lot of good things. I've won a bunch of tournaments, not as many as others, but regardless. But now, finally getting a chance to have a bowling alley, I could finally give back. This game has done a lot for me personally. It kept me out of a lot of trouble. Where I grew up, there was a lot of kids that were just getting into a lot of garbage. I grew up down in the mean streets of Somerville, man. You know, you hear me talk for 3 seconds and you know it. But there was a lot of my buddies that were just getting into the wrong stuff and like, you know, drugs and robbing people and doing stupid stuff all over the place. And I was in the bowling alley the whole time. They were getting pinched and getting thrown in jail for the weekend. I was in the bowling alley throwing 10 strings that night, you know. So I wasn't getting in trouble by those guys. So in turn, it really taught me a lot about, like, not just bowling itself, but like life in general, you know, how to be a good person, how to stay mentally strong, how to not flip out as soon as one little thing goes wrong, you know. And it's done a lot for me. I mean, I have a beautiful fiance. I have two beautiful kids I met Melissa at Woburn Bowlerdrome.
Sure. And
my boy's 6 years old, averaging 80 right now. I mean, my God. This is true. I did not average 80 until I was 13 years old.
Wow.
And my boy is six.
And he's half that age.
He's half that age, yeah. Wow. So it's going to be amazing to just watch him go. But, I mean, now that we have the lanes, we have Riverwalk, and all we've wanted to do is just give some stuff back. And originally, this whole thing started with Kyle getting the show going. I wanted somebody who knew candlepin bowling up, down, left, and right. Somebody who wouldn't have to have a learning curve, how to call a match. Somebody like myself who could just get behind a microphone and just know how to call a match the right way. And all it takes is somebody who's just like lived, eat, slept, and breathed this game.
Absolutely.
And that's what most of us do. You know, most of us who go to these tournaments and who bowl every weekend and we go to the Worlds and we go to all these other things, we live this game. And I mean, you guys know, you're the same way. I mean, we just live this game and it's what we do. And when it's our turn to give back a little bit, this is what we do. We, in some way, not necessarily just, oh, let's have a tournament, you know. No, let's do something that's going to stick, something that's going to last, something that's going to put the bowling alley on the map. Because the other draw of it was that the lanes weren't doing so well. There was a time when we were looking at it about a year in 2014, about the summertime, and we were starting to look at things and go, wait a minute, we might be in trouble here. And then we started coming up with the idea for the show, and then we got a few other ideas that we smashed into the whole thing of what we were doing at Riverwalk. And here we are a year later, and we've been turning profit. And the lanes are running better than ever and things are going really good. So, I mean, knock on wood, as I knock on my forehead right now, everything's going in the right direction. And that includes Classic Candlepins. And it's just been amazing. It's been one hell of a ride. And we're all buds. So it's cool when just a bunch of buddies getting together, doing this, filming it, talking, you know, razzing each other. Richie Lamone calling me the new guy. You know, that was amazing. I had no idea you were going to do that. That made me laugh. I laughed my ass off about that later.
I don't think Kyle knew I was going to do it either, which made it even better.
No, there's no way he did. I remember seeing his face. There's no way he knew that was coming.
Yeah, but the lower thirds on the pregame segment that showed Mark Ritchie scoundrel.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember that.
You suck for that, by the way.
It was like scoundrel world record holder, I think. It was like scoundrel / world record holder, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. So. Not world record holder and then scoundrel.
No,
like I'm the original scoundrel. Oh yeah, by the way, broke a world record one night.
Yeah, I mean, you need to be humbled. That was the whole point of making that slide.
Yes.
I wish he had an ego that we had a humble.
Well, you just can't take that chance. You just never know. I mean, you know.
You suck. I love you, buddy.
So Mark,
but this is why it works. It's like these group of guys right here in this room. I mean, Kyle, it took us one show to work Frank in correctly.
You know what? I think
correctly.
It didn't take much.
Correctly. Well, well, I'm doing things correctly?
No. Yeah.
How dare you, say
you
I
were
know
terrible
what I'm doing.
And we had a cover for you the first show and now
oh,
you
oh, thanks.
Now you're your broken Spanish English works perfectly Christ. On the show and everyone understands you. No, you were fine. We had the feeling that we didn't know the best way to integrate you into the show. I mean, that was the discussion we had after the that ladder yeah. was over yeah. with the ladies, and it seemed like it was a perfect combination, like lamb and tuna fish. Oh, you mean you want spaghetti meatball? Is that a better combination?
I have nothing for you. I'm sorry.
That's Big Daddy when he's
Oh, F. Sandler. He's the...
That's awesome.
I think getting back to what we were saying before is that I feel like the game or some of the people in the game have forgotten that the game is, yeah, you can be competitive. You can compete at the highest level of Candlepin, but ultimately it's about fun and it's about why are you doing this? Are you doing it because you can make money doing it? You're not going to get into Candlepin bowling to make money. There's not enough money into it.
This is the wrong era for that.
Right. There was never any era for that.
I agree.
There was never any era for that. But to me, it's always been about the competition. It's about the people and it's about the game itself. We said it, I don't know how many times during this last taping. This is the best sport in the world.
Agreed.
Yes.
You know, I mean,
this is the one sport you can play from age, I mean, until
three.
When you begin to walk until the day you die. Find me another sport that you can play, maybe not competitively on the highest level, but I mean, we've had like 100-year-old people. People have taken their great-grandmother bowling.
Sure.
Because she could still pick up the ball and kind of just barely get it out there.
Yeah.
But she's playing with her grandkids. She probably hadn't been able to play with her great-grandkids ever because she can't get down the floor and run around.
Absolutely not.
But they can bowl together.
Yeah.
Find me another sport where you can do that besides like cards or something like that. Like something that actually requires a little bit of physical activity.
Hmm. You imagine a guy like Charlie Drutis has been on TV in 5 different decades.
That's amazing.
You know?
And still bowling.
Yeah.
Still bowling. I was talking to Richard Myrick yesterday. Still bowling.
Yeah.
Wow.
How old is he now?
All of it. I don't know, but it's got to be all of it.
He's in his 80s now.
It's got to be all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like, you know, you have, you know, the drama of the game and social media has made things a lot easier for people to get their beefs or whatever. But ultimately it comes down to it being the best in the world, I think. And I mean, where else would people work in an endeavor where you're not doing it for money, you're doing it for the love of the game?
Exactly.
You know?
And that's the only thing I try to say. And you know, there are people who look at you and you say, oh, they say that's so cliche. There's no way you could just be doing it because you love the game. It's like, no, you don't understand. I would not be anywhere near the same person that I am today if it wasn't for this game keeping me out of trouble and keeping my life on the straight and narrow. I would have been one of those punks that kept getting thrown in jail every single weekend. Because I would have been making bad choices. I would have had nowhere else to go. Instead, I would walk, you know, my 5, 6, 7-year-old self after school down to the bowling alley every day and bowl like 6, 7 strings a night just to stay out of the way. And then I'd walk myself home. And then as we got older, I would start taking the bus or riding my bike to the bowling alley, but still going to the bowling alley. And I got my buddies, you know, where were you guys over the week? Oh, we got busted. We robbed a gas station and, you know, we got caught. And well, that's because you guys are idiots.
Yeah, you don't need that.
And where were you, Maki? What were you doing? I'm sorry. I was at the bowling alley. I was probably on my 18th string when you guys got bagged.
Well, you know, you mentioned growing up in Somerville. Two great establishments that I know of in Somerville, one being Ball Square Bowldrome. Or that could be the Medford line.
Technically by the post office address, Medford
yeah.
But you could seriously.
You walk across the street in Somerville.
Literally. I think it's the yellow line in the middle of the street is Somerville Medford line.
Yeah, yeah. Another house that, you know, still exists.
Yep.
And wow. Well, let's say some good and bad things about this place. Sacco's Bowlhaven. Sacco's was a, you know, like the quintessential old school house.
Right.
It was awesome. It was loud. It was, you know, tough.
Right.
Honest.
Tough as nails.
Exactly.
toughest nails.
But that's what Canapin Bowling was. Now, what they've done, they cut out, what, six lanes? Five lanes. That. They put in a pizza joint.
Yep.
And now, that's like, you know, one of the few houses you have to wait hours to get a lane.
You know, before they did that, before Flatbread Pizza went in there, it's the same Flatbread Pizza that's up in Amesbury that actually originally looked at Riverwalk for the same thing when it was Lafayette. They wanted to come in to Lafayette, and they were looking at taking out four lanes, putting in their own little pizza thing, but then the club ended up saying no because it is a private club.
Yeah.
Property. Like, it's a weird setup up there, but it's very advantageous for us, so we go with it. But regardless, I digress. When Flatbread, before Flatbread went into Sacco's down in Somerville, there was 15 lanes, never any wait. Never. It could be a Friday night and you're in Davis Square in Somerville, the most populous area. You got the Red Line right there. You got the major bus connections. You got Tufts University like a stone's throw away. There's at any point in time, a couple thousand people walking around Davis Square at least. And there would never be anybody in the bowling alley.
Right.
The pool hall would be stock, lock, and barrel full because they used to have eight pool tables.
Yep, I remember
including
that.
An old billiard table with no pocket tail. I used to love that. I actually learned how to play billiards when I was like 11. It was awesome. But you never had to wait. There might be two or three lanes going now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Forget it.
If you walk in there now, forget it. It's a 4-hour wait to get a lane on a Friday night.
Sure. And, you know, I think they have it's not what us pros would like.
No.
Really? It's not for us. It's not what we're in it for. But in terms of the survival of the game, I think they have a pretty damn good business model.
It is tremendous what they have inadvertently done. Oh, see, they wanted to create a nice restaurant. And I don't blame them like a theme on the side.
Exactly.
The old lanes that they ripped up, they turned them into tables.
It's the bar top and tables and stuff.
Right. They reused and repurposed everything except for the machines. They got rid of the machines and had new machines put in, but they repurposed everything. So the place still looks like it's 1945 in there.
Yeah.
However, completely and utterly remodeled in like 2010. You know, personally myself, I grew up bowling there.
Mm-hmm.
I have thrown more strings in that house than I think in my entire professional career combined.
Yep.
Everywhere I've ever bowled since I've been an adult, I've thrown, I can't even tell you how many tens of tens and tens of thousands of strings I've bowled at Sacco's. And I go back there now. Personally, to me, I look at what they're doing for the game and what they, I don't even know if they tried to do it on purpose or not, but they created the ultimate family-friendly candlepin environment.
Absolutely.
It's the ultimate. The only thing they don't have is video games, but you know what? You don't need it.
You don't need it. The place you don't is packed as it is.
It's packed.
And their pizza's damn good.
The pizza's phenomenal. It's
very good.
It's the same flatbread in Amesbury. You should really try them. I don't know if you've been to the one in Amesbury, but I've been to the one in
Bedford, New Bedford.
Something like that.
It's right near Burlington Mall. It's right up the street.
Bedford. No, it's really, really good, but they did phenomenal work in the building. They still get all the old pictures up. But myself personally, I walk in there and it kind of hurts to see.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I was saying, it's not for us pros.
I've never set foot in there.
Never?
I have never set foot
in there. Me neither.
If you do, do not bring your own bowling balls. Do not bring your own bowling shoes.
Absolutely not.
Do not do it.
It is, the floors are dirty.
And yeah.
The machines are disgusting. But if you are going to just go in there with like some buddies to just get some pizzas, get some beers, and then throw a few games, use the house balls, use the house shoes, you're going to have a blast. You're going to have an absolute blasty blast. But leave your stuff at home.
Right. That's nothing competitive going on there whatsoever. Just
absolutely not.
Pizza, beer, fun.
They don't even have leagues.
No.
They have so much open bowling, people just coming in, getting pizzas.
Right.
Because it's perfect. Because if you go in there with your family, you order two pizzas and the whole thing, it takes about 15 minutes for the pizzas to cook, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Why not get a lane and throw a string?
Sure.
You know? And they get a lane and they bowl a string, so there's another, you know, there's some more money coming on their end, you know? And then you get the pizza, which is absolutely delicious.
It is.
Yeah. It's a great, great place. Such a good location right in the middle of Davis Square.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I learned pretty much everything I've ever learned in my life in that place, man.
Sacco's Bowl, even.
I really did. Yep.
I remember I went there on the very last day before they closed for renovations.
Yeah.
And they had already started work.
Yeah.
And, like, dust was falling from the ceiling from the sheetrock and stuff. And
oh, yeah.
Bowling shoes were all dirty and all that stuff. And I threw, like, a 150 game or something.
That's about right.
And, you know, and, like... you know, I couldn't believe that it was. I was afraid for what was going to happen to the place,
yeah.
But I think they did. They've done a pretty good job.
Yeah, nobody really knew what the end up outcome was. We all just heard that it was closing.
Yeah.
Because to us, after a while, once we stopped, like, you know, doing a lot of bowling there when we were kids, once we got started getting into junior leagues, we were bowling lanes of games in Cambridge. Yeah, yeah. Then we started going up to Pilgrim Lanes in Haverhill.
Yep.
But when we had left there, we would go down to Sacco's at nighttime, but it was the pool hall to us. Right. So at that time, we would go, you know, shoot pool and just play with the guys. But if we went bowling, we went somewhere else.
Sure.
Unless I was just going by myself to practice, yeah. That would be it. But if I was with the guys, it was just the pool hall. Well, we were really wondering, like, what were they going to do with this? Right. Are they going to keep the pool tables? Are they going to get rid of them? There's a fun little piece of Boston history in there, too. Going way back, if anybody's familiar with the Boston Strangler.
Sure.
Okay, yeah. They had his pool table in there.
Oh, wow.
The pool table that was in the original Boston Strangler's house. They had it inside. It was an old Brunswick orange and cream-colored pool table. And there was this big, huge plaque that had an authentic... why can I never say this word? Authentication plaque on to that effect. But it said that this table is certified to have been belonged to the Boston Strangler circa 19, whatever the heck it was. It was interesting, right? It was just one of those little things that kind of made it even more
unique.
Like almost like there was like an old aura about the place. There's just something about those old bowling alleys.
Yeah.
There's so few of them. And everybody's going with the shiny, glitzy, modern ones.
Mm-hmm.
I would still take an old school, loud dungeon any day of the
Absolutely.
And that's exactly what you're doing with Riverwalk with a modern touch. I mean, you know, you maintain the place very well.
Thank you.
But it's still classic. It's still got history. You can feel something when you walk in there. It's how many great bowlers have walked in there and thrown huge strings?
Right.
You know,
like probably all of them,
yeah.
You know,
at one point
that was always a Friday night house. They used to have pro tours there,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily WCBC, but like the amateur tour would go there and things. There was always something going on at Lafayette back in the day. You know, there was always something going on.
Yeah.
There is a definite divide and a difference between Lafayette Lanes and Riverwalk Lanes. I know it's the same building, but there is a 1,000,000% divide. And just because I used to bowl at Lafayette when they'd have Comcast roll offs there and. A lot of times you didn't want to go to Lafayette. You didn't want to go there. It was the last one usually before the final, but you didn't want to go there.
Yep.
It was oftentimes kind of dirty and kind of tough, and you just didn't want to deal with it. But we'd make the drive to Amesbury just because if you wanted to get on TV that bad, you did.
Yeah, give yourself another shot.
Yeah, I went all the way out to Worcester to get on, just to get to a finals.
Right.
You know, and it worked out that there were only two guys there, so I was automatically in the finals. Great. I had to go to Ficos to do that finals, and it didn't go very well for me, but... That was a long time ago. But you had to drive if you wanted to get on TV.
That's it.
It's just the way it worked.
You
drove all over the place to try to get on TV. I made a bunch of finals. I just couldn't put the five strings together.
It's no joke at the final when you're trying to make it onto a show. I don't care whether it was Comcast. I never got a shot at five. It went off the air when I was too young.
Mm.
Or Stars and Strikes or any of those ones. But it's no joke when you get to the final and it's you five games for all the glory. And one game can break it.
Oh, yeah.
You come out of the gate, you hit the headpin six times, and you throw a 103. That's tough to eat in the first game when there's three guys that went 140 or better, you know?
Of course.
You got to keep plugging and keep trying. I mean, never, ever quit after four strings. Let's put it that way.
Of course not.
No. But at the same time, what you really want to do is you just got to keep it going and try and try and try. It's really, 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 really important.
I would have lost to Artie Gendro that way, and I almost beat Marks the same way.
Yeah. I saw that match.
Yeah, they came up really,
really
close.
Really was. It really freaking was.
Hey, you got to give a guy credit when he hits the 2-7-8 clean.
Yeah, exactly.
With nothing there.
I missed it. I had just gone outside for a smoke. I came back in and I heard everybody just go, "What the fuck? Like, how'd you make that?"
It made it even worse because it was opposite my strike. So I put the pressure on him on top of it because I had two balls coming.
How many guys don't look at the score? Period until the end of the match or the end of the rollout, the end of the tournament, end of the, you know, Friday night, whatever. Is there something, like, I think I remember Sarge when I was a kid, like, he wouldn't look at the score at all. It's just something that he knew in his head. Like, if he knew that he was down, it would kind of maybe get to him, whatever, and he just wouldn't do it. I don't know about, you know, nowadays because I don't really talk to him anymore, but. Are there any guys that do that now? Is there something psychological to knowing how much you need and, you know?
I don't even know. I don't know if either one of us could answer that question 100% accurately. I mean, I know that there's a lot of guys that like to look. There's a lot of guys that when they're out of it, they love to look. When they're winning, they don't like to look. So it might depend on their scenario as to what's going on. Like, I'll just give you a prime example. I usually don't look at the scoreboard. I usually don't care because it doesn't matter because it's me versus 10 pins any given box. And if I knock down all my pins, then I shouldn't have to worry about too much.
Right.
Yesterday at the 20 stringer, the first 10, I was not bowling so good. I mean, I was bowling well, but those pins were hitting like redwood trees yesterday, man. It was just redonkulous for a while. And it got to the point where I knew I was not bowling well. I was in no contention. So I was not necessarily looking at my own scores, but I was looking to see if anybody else was having any kind of better luck than I was, or if anybody else was actually starting to run away with it, or if it's, you know, just in randomly, let me just go look at the scoreboard. Hmm. Then in the second half, once I started bowling better, I started bowling a lot better in the second half. And I knew I was climbing the leaderboard a little bit. And I was never a threat to cash by that point. I mean, I was in 35th place at the half. I had 11:49 for 10. And I was embarrassed to be there.
Well, that's not like you, Mark. You know that.
There was a lot of guys who were 100 pins off of where they should have been, too. There was five guys, I'd say, yesterday in there. I would say Jeff Surrett, Sean Baker, Corey Smith, come all the way down from Fredericton.
Yep.
Him and Nate LeBlanc, actually. Nate drove to Fredericton. He's from up the top in Nova Scotia, not necessarily up on Cape Breton, but he's up from the top in Nova Scotia. But they met each other and came down. Corey bowled well, but those three guys, you know.
Susie.
Matty Susie, yes. Yeah. Yeah, local guy. He's a house guy there.
He is a house guy.
But he's trying his ass off. Well, and he has come so far that
I think I looked at it through like 17 or so.
Yeah.
And he was second.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
I couldn't believe it. I mean, I've seen him bowl. He's a great bowler. I didn't expect that though. So great for him.
That boy, he just couldn't stop. He in the first half, he was like five lanes to my left. You know, which is kind of a gap, but you know, when we're all sitting down watching, you could see who's doing what. You can hear the crowd noise, who's yelling.
Yeah, you know who's around you and everything.
And the next thing you know, you look over at Matsusi and he's sitting on a triple.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like 10 box, 10 box, triple. Take a seat.
Hey.
Came up, dropped 9, faced it, threw a double after it.
Wow.
Like he went absolutely bananas for like a 170 in, you know, some random game or a high 60. Yeah. You know, he had a couple stinkers at the end, you know, whatever. But regardless, it's still a massive game when nobody else was throwing massive games.
Right, right.
So it wasn't necessarily like if this was the 20 stringers of 5-10 years ago, I don't know if he would have made as much noise as he did. But in this era of which we're bowling now, you pop a couple 150s, 160s in the first 10, you're going to be in the top five.
Yeah, you're in contention.
The house has gotten significantly tougher, and the level of elite bowlers going to these tournaments has dropped off significantly. I don't know if it's the entry fee scaring them away, or if it's that the fact that it's 20 strings. Which that scares a lot of people away just right there.
That scares the hell out of me.
I understand. I mean, it scares a lot of guys away that it's 10 strings in a row with three guys to a lane. So it takes like 5.5 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes a while. Then you sit down for 45 minutes, which they provide delicious food. Mm-hmm. I mean, Lexi Howard, Sean Howard, and everybody up there gets a massive shout out for me for all the food that they cook. And they provide everything free to the bowlers, which is kind of funny because yesterday was the 9th 20 stringer that I've done.
Wow.
9 years in a row. And my first one, I remember talking to a few guys, you know, just to try to get the lay of it. You know, what do you expect? You've done this before. You know, what should I expect going into it? And a lot of people were saying it is the best $150 lunch you will ever eat.
That's a good way to put it. They say that a lot.
I've heard that. I've heard a ton of people say that.
Nick said the place was falling hard yesterday.
Oh my God. We heard the same thing from Surrett earlier today when we talked to him.
He was literally, I was telling you earlier, him and I were bowling right next to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
I was on his right, but we were both bowling in the third position all day on one lane next to each other. And that boy, if you take 20 strings, that's what, 200 boxes? He hit the head pin in 180 of them.
I don't doubt it.
I saw it. And then he hit the object pin on his spare, probably 175 of that. And the boy just didn't miss. And there was still games that like he had everything and it was 122, And it's like, okay, that's a good game.
Yeah.
But anywhere else, I mean, even if we were at some of the stone palaces of the game, which we bowl at now, that would have still been 135. They were just tough. I'll give you a for instance, I hit the head pin on a particular ball and took out the 1-2-4. Not even the four horsemen, and on a crucified pocket hit. I mean, the ball crossed over and hit the 1-2, and the one went this way, the two went straight back, and the four just kind of trickled into the gutter. And then the ball vanished into Dimension X.
Of course it did.
Like, I don't know what happened, but it was just three pins off of burying the head pin. And I'm just like, okay, thanks for playing. This is going to be that day. All right, I think I'm just going to stand back and let Surrett win this. Yeah, it's not my day today. Time to hit the old dusty trail.
Dusty trail.
You know, but it was a hell of a tournament day yesterday. Surrett deserved everything that he won yesterday. Every little thing.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was falling different at the Pro Series. When I was practicing, I couldn't find the head pin to save my life. I think it's, for some reason they gave us a ton of practice time for the doubles event. I feel like we practiced for like 25 minutes. And I must have thrown over 20 boxes, and I think I hit the head pin once and had one mark. I moved two boards to the left, further than I ever go, and I opened up with two back-to-back 140 games. Like, I don't know why I had to move. I just said, you know what, I'm going to try this, and it worked.
Their dots are different.
Their approaches are also very deep.
Yes.
As well. So I think it might be a challenge to find your spot, especially if it's a place that you don't bowl at very often, too.
Yeah, but at least the ball returns are the same ones that they have at Lakeside. Now, I know that they don't end exactly at the same exact point at the end of the, you know, where the foul line is. I'm sure it's not perfect.
Right.
But I get a good sense of where I need to be at Lakeside, where I do bowl very often, so the depth shouldn't have been a problem.
Mm.
And then I end up throwing a 600, and you know, I missed a couple of shots in the end, and we didn't make the cut. We missed by seven pins. God damn, I hate that shit. Rather miss by 40.
I swear though, their dots are different.
I think you're
now
right.
Now you have the lineup dots on the approaches. They're different there. Mm. They're very different there. I noticed it yesterday because I'm a spot bowler. When I throw the ball, I'm looking down the whole time. Like Hideki Okajima, when he throws the ball, he's not even looking at the catcher. I'm not looking at the pins. I look at the foul line.
Yeah, that's what
I deliver the ball.
Yep.
And a lot of people say it's really weird, but I can't do it the other way. I look at the pins, and the ball doesn't even hit the lane I'm on. I throw the ball two lanes over.
I feel like I'm going to fall.
Right. I have no balance. I don't know what's going on. I can't. I have no idea. It's the strangest thing in the world. Somebody, my son says to me, he goes, Dada, I look at the pins. How do you look at the floor? I'm like, how do you look at the pins?
Yeah.
You know, I just don't get it. But looking at their dots and trying to line myself up yesterday, I was having the same problem in warm-up. I mean, I'm in my normal spot where I usually go, and I'm forever going like three pin in the face. I'm missing the head pin by that half of the ball that you normally hit the head pin with and get it moving. Now I'm punching more half Worcesters than anything. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's not the spot that I'm not usually in. And I moved over like onto the other side, the left side of the head pin dot, and all of a sudden it was Pocket City. Not that I was knocking
and
pins
then you
over.
You took out the 1-2-4.
Not that I was not. Yeah, right. Not
good,
that I was
good
knocking,
adjustment, Mark.
I wasn't knocking pins over. I just started hitting the head pin and punching spread eagles and then taking out the 1-2-4. You know, I'm bringing my duck pin balls to that tournament next year. I'm saying it out loud. Bringing duck pin balls. Just kidding.
See, I tend to use the arrows more than the foul line.
Really?
It's always just the way I've preferred to do it. But I never look at the pins. Never.
No, it seemed, I mean, it makes sense logically. Somebody would say, well, look at your target and throw at your target. I just said target two different ways. Target, target.
Tarjay. English leather.
You need to close the show with that. All right, I'm Frank Mason. This was Alley Chat. Tarjay. But it really makes a difference. Like when you think the dots are in one place, like they are at most everywhere else, and then you try to line yourself up to them, and then you find that you're off constantly. Like it just doesn't work.
You know, that's interesting. Is that regulated by NBA?
There
ICBA?
Is no regulation for that.
Okay,
no.
so ICBA must really only kind of regulate the pit, the gutters, sidewalls, maybe.
The width of the lane too.
Width of the lane.
Depth of the lane must be.
Foul line to the head pin.
Right.
Foul line to the head pin, which is an interesting point. That could bring us up into something in a little while. The foul line distance, the rules that cover what happens when you break one of those rules, like if you cross the foul line or not, how wide your gutters can be, how thick your sidewalls can be. There are a plethora of regulated standards, should I say, that things have to be at least this much.
Right.
You know, like your sidewalls can be 3/4 inch wide.
Between this and this.
But it has to be this much room in between them.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So you could put a sidewall on the left side and the right side, but there must be this much room in between for the pins to have action.
Gotcha.
You can't cram it so tight. Your curtains must be at least 14 inches back of the back of the lane. That the end plank. The deck.
Okay.
Well, even behind the deck, there's a plank of wood about 3 inches wide.
Okay.
And that's how sometimes you can cut a pin behind, like a 10 pin or a 7 pin, yep. And it seems to stay up there.
I get you. Okay.
Because the pin sits almost on the very back of the plate.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a plank of wood, which is about 3 or 4 inches wide. I think it's like 3 inches, which a pin can like slide in and slide back across. And it can look like a pin's hovering in air, even though it's behind the corner pin because there is space. But there are a plethora of sanctions and regulations that they have to make your lanes legit by their standards. But I don't think dots on the floor are one of them as far as
regulated.
No, not really. Because nowadays especially with all the new synthetic, and I'll say it out loud, synthetic garbage that's protruding into candlepin nowadays. It's changing the game enough to where now a lot of the places they have to paint on a lob line because they're not made for candlepin.
Right.
You know, they have to paint on a lob line. They have to go down and paint on a deadwood line. They have to augment it so that the plate can sit below the lip. You know how there is supposed to be a lip at the end.
Of course.
Yeah. So there is a lot of different stuff that the synthetic has brought into the game, but hopefully the synthetic approaches stay far away. But I do know that a lot of the guys, when they are lining themselves up, use a specific spot on the floor, like a dot or a specific board or something on the floor. I know when we used to bowl the Worlds up in Bangor, Bangor Brewer Bowling Lanes, that there were no dots on the floor. Much like Metro Bowl up in Peabody.
Yep.
There's no place to like line yourself up to. So guys would go out on the floor with a pencil. And they'd mark an X, or they'd go out there with like one of those like little colored sticky tabs.
Yep, I've seen people do that.
You see what?
Yeah, absolutely.
Those colored dots or whatever, and they stick the dots on the floor. So what you do if your opponent's doing that, you kind of wait until he's on the other side, and then you peel up the dot and you know
throws it over a board.
It's all move it over a board. You know, it's all in good gamesmanship.
Yeah, mental game.
It is the mental game. Yeah.
But speaking of rules and regulations, ICBA and all that stuff, foul lines. There was something that came up on I hate this website, the VOI forum.
Yes.
I feel it's pathetic that people will go in there and talk shit and not put their real name and so forth. But that's beside the point.
That's the slimiest part about it. You got something to say. Say it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Say it as yourself. Exactly. Don't say it as bowler. Or curious. Yeah, we know what curious.
Yeah, curious.
But anyhow, on Void, there was a question. Someone had asked if, you know, she had seen someone throw a first ball, go over the foot foul line.
Yeah.
Not lob line or anything, foot foul line. And the bowler took it as an illegal ball, reset the pins, and threw the next two balls.
Which is proper.
Exactly. From what I understand, that is the correct action. Yep. According to ICBA rules and so forth. And then there were, of course, different perspectives on how the rule reads and so forth. And it's really tough to judge that. What do you guys think? I mean,
I saw it when you posted it up here a little while ago. I'm not on as much as I would like to be.
Well, I tend to boycott that.
Boycott. Yes. Yes. Sponsor. No, I read it when you put it up a little while ago, and I believe the person who posted that is completely wrong. The rules that we've grown up with and the rules of the game say this. If you cross the line, it matters not what the ball does, where it goes, how many pins it knocks over.
Mm-hmm.
It matters not. If it knocks any pins over, you push the foul button, or if it has an automatic whatever.
Yep.
And then you reset your pins. You then have two balls to knock over 10 pins. You threw your ball and you knocked over like four pins, but you tripped the line and you knocked over four. That doesn't mean you have two balls to get six pins. Right. That's ridiculous. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. I mean, you should have the opportunity to maximize your score.
Agreed. You screwed up. You fouled.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then,
fine.
Of course, there's the other perspective where, you could intentionally foul. My take on that is why would you do that? I just don't see where that comes from.
If you were kind of an ass, you could do it to, like, if the other team was kicking ass, like, if you, let's say your team was, you know, really getting pounded by somebody, and the other team just kept going and going and going, you could do it to kind of kill their momentum, kind of stop it, create a scene in the middle of the match. Yeah, you look like an ass for doing it.
Oh, absolutely.
But you would kind of be like, I guess in a really weird way, helping your team by playing some defense or something. I don't know. I'm not a defense guy in bowling. So, like, I don't understand how some people do that. But that's the only way I could look at seeing, like, if you intentionally foul. I always took an intentional foul as if somebody, like, punched a spread eagle and they got so mad that they punched a spread eagle that they, like gave the Rossetti stomp to the foul line. And I love Laurie Rossetti.
Of course.
I haven't seen her in a long time. If she hears this, Laurie, how you doing, sweetheart? I don't mean any disrespect by this. But Rossetti had the best stomp in all of Candlepin.
Well, you bowled with her at Woburn, didn't you?
I did for a long time in the Speed League, and I picked it up sometimes. Like, sometimes I still do it. It's not out of anger. It's like right when that ball hits the impact of the pins, you just give it a big old stomp.
Sure.
I do that a lot. And I got it from Laurie Rossetti. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But some guys might do it. They'd get so mad that they punched an eagle or punched a Worcester or something that they just kind of stomp and trip the light. Well, that's not making a natural bowling action. Like, as in, like, if you were just sliding and you tripped the line, it was an accident. Yeah, that's a natural, you lose your ball, reset, now you get two balls.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you were just being a dick, throwing a temper tantrum, and you stomp the line or you do something to trip the lane, that's an intentional foul. You deserve a zero.
You deserve it, right.
You deserve a zero.
You deserve the zero balls.
And nowadays, it seems as though a lot of guys are too worried about hurting somebody else's feelings to call something like that, or they're too worried about the negative attention it will draw to that. So a lot of these rules have actually been almost thrown out the window. Like, the lob line almost doesn't exist anymore. And I find that so stupid, because this is what you're supposed to do. Like, these lanes are not oiled. They're not maintained like 10-pin lanes are. Mm-hmm. They're not synthetic in a lot of places. And there should be a rule as to how you roll the ball, okay? You roll the damn ball. There are guys who are pitching them out there 40 feet, 30 feet, but like 3 or 4 inches off the lane kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And nobody's calling lobs on these guys anymore. Just because they're afraid of going, oh man, come on. What do you mean? What is that? You try to make somebody feel bad about calling it, and it is what it is. So, I mean, in this era, yes, we've lost a lot of the old school, just go somewhere and kick ass mentality that the guys had. The guys that, like, we watched growing up, the Olsters, the Flynns, the Carringtons, the Richards, the Burgers, those guys, that generation, to this generation where it's gotten a lot more, I don't want to hurt that guy's feelings. I don't want to get in a fight. I don't want to start any problems. So then when you are a loudmouth Italian boy like I am, and, you know, sometimes you make those calls because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
You're perceived as an ass or something like that. And that's fine. I don't really care. I just, how much I love the game, that I respect the rules that much, that all I do is expect people to respect them.
Right.
If you're here, if you call yourself a professional, you know, you should be obliging by these rules anyway.
Sure.
They're what we do. And know the rules.
I think that's firstly most important.
Right. Know the rules of what you're doing. And I mean, the ICBA, right on their website, has the downloadable copy of all the rules. You can easy download it, read it. And it's actually a pretty good read. There's a lot of stuff in there that you might not know that you should do. But getting back to this foul line thing, that should definitely not have a chance to, like, get a six box
if
you knock down four pins. No, it should always be get a 10. I don't know who posted that, but I think they're dead wrong.
You know, I think it's interesting with the whole intentional foul thing. Like, I try to think of, who's a bowler that really attacks the line? First name that comes to mind, Rich Cocci. Guy never fouls. I don't understand how I never see him. Guy's 100 miles an hour.
He is.
And he's a great bowler. I think of an up-and-coming bowler now, Josh Riopelle. He's 100 miles an hour at the line. He's the type of guy that could sneak in that intentional foul that was posted and get his box over so that he gets a full rack. But I'm not saying that he ever fouls. It's, you know, I'm just saying, who could possibly sneak in a foul and make it intentional? That would be my question. How would you, like, ooh, I tripped. Oh, you know, like, it's kind of obvious because we throw so many boxes.
Right.
People see us bowl.
We all know each other.
You know.
Like, all the boys know how the boys bowl. So when you do something goofy and then you turn around and go, oh, oops.
You're going to get called out on it.
Yeah. I'm trying really hard not to talk about that night at Riverwalk. but you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. All
right. And that was one of the things that kind of falls underneath this a little tiny bit. But when you look at certain things, there are times when you know when a guy does something on purpose and you know when it was just an accident. If a guy just by accident slips over the line, all right, you messed up.
Yeah.
That's fine. But if a guy like, you know, rips something and it's not makeable and the team doesn't really care or whatever, and he just like blatantly walks over the line or turns around and just flings a ball 50 feet in the air, that's a blatant foul. But good luck finding a guy that'll call it nowadays.
Right.
Right.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
There's all these rules that are designed to prevent all this other garbage, and a lot of them aren't being called or used because of nobody wants to offend anybody.
The other thing too, like I mean, bullshit. There are guys that are very much proponents of not riling up the other team. The last thing you want to do is piss off Team X. Don't say anything. Just let that foul go. Because you don't want to rile matches close.
You're enabling.
I know. I agree with you.
There is two sides of the coin. You're absolutely right. There are definitely two sides to the coin. But it's just, it's all about, again, finding that fine line with, you know, what are you there for? Are you there to have a good time? Are you there to like win and do well in the Friday Pro League, be called Friday Pro League champion? Are you there for just the money at the end of the year? Like, you know, what are you there for? If you're there to completely and utterly give 100% of your effort to try to win and have a good team on a Friday night, you still make that call.
Right.
You have to make that call.
Right.
Whether it riles up the other guys or not, whether it makes them mad or not. If it makes them mad that you called their guy for doing something wrong.
That's a problem.
Right. Right. That's what I mean. Like, that's like saying, oh, well, this guy, all he did was slide into a car with two people. Like, if there was like eight people in that car, we'd say something, but there's only two, so just let him go.
Right.
No, he still just slid into a car with two people. Like, that's
right.
That's blatant action right there.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I ended up a few weeks ago when we were at home, I slipped and went over the foul line, and I called it on myself, and I hit the reset button. Norcross made a great spare against me. And I had a full rack, and I had guys giving me all sorts of shit because I fouled. Like, I can't believe you're a professional. And I threw a hammer.
Right.
And, you know, I want to thank Mike McGann. He came right up to me and said, that's the finest spare I've ever seen. You know, like, in everyone's face that they were all over me about it. And I made the spare. It worked out for me because I got a mark out of it. But, you know, you have to call it on yourself when it happens.
I really do.
But I don't know how I could have made that intentional. Because I left the check mark, nickel. As I point at Kyle on the webcam, I don't know how, like, oh, that's a shitty leave. I'm going to foul. Like, it's just, I don't know how I would have worked that in.
You'd have to be low enough to even be able to think about it.
Right.
To intentionally or deliberately foul. And I don't think guys like us stoop to that level.
Right.
No,
so it's impossible to even think about where you would sneak in a deliberate foul, take a zero, and somehow get your team fired up or something. I don't even get it. I want to know where the deliberate foul rule came from, because I always thought that there must have been a thing that happened somewhere back in the day. I don't know why. Because I don't know if a deliberate foul would have been something that would have just been thought of, or if that was something that happened and they had to incorporate some rule later.
I wonder if it's something equipment related. In other words, to prevent bowlers from smashing equipment, kicking ball racks and tables and stuff,
yeah,
they consider that possibly a deliberate foul. And that, you know, by putting that in the rule book in words, in writing, that kind of covers their asses. And, you know, see, the ICBA, you know, that's just my theory. It could have been a certain terminology to cover respect for the bowling equipment, the proprietary, you know, equipment.
Well, there is a whole other section about unsportsmanlike conduct.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, in the rule book, like as it stands right there, that, you know, if bowlers do have to be warned about being a jackass, you know, ripping a chair out of a thing in a playoff match or doing something else that's really stupid.
Uprooting the entire table at Pilgrim.
Right. Things like that. You know, like flipping a table over or something, like if you think you're awesome, or, you know, if you're failing at something or whatever, your team's getting smoked by somebody you shouldn't be, like they rip the table out of the floor or something like that. You know, those things need to be dealt with accordingly, but I still want to know where the hell this deliberate foul thing came
Well, into. You know, another thing that just came to mind is I've discussed this with Brian Fournier before. A lot of centers that don't have a ball rack against the wall, or even if they do have a ball rack against the wall to your right or left, say part of your approach consistently is to slide and then kind of step to the side and use the wall for assistance.
Yes.
That's a deliberate foul.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where it came from. Who knows?
I think that I was going to bring that up as a matter of fact. You know exactly what you're saying. You can't use the equipment to stop you from fouling. So, and therefore, it's a foul.
Right. There are guys who slide and they use the floor. Like they throw the ball and then they put their hand down to like catch their balance or something like that. That's garbage because you're if you can't throw the ball and stay on balance and not fall every single time you throw, that's foul. There are guys who, as they roll the ball, they bump the ball return to just kind of stop themselves. That's supposed to be a deliberate foul. You know, you're not supposed to be able to use anything or touch anything. It's supposed to be you, a ball in a lane, and you're supposed to get rid of the ball, keep your balance, and go knock the pins over. But again, it's one of those things that people look at and they just kind of go, oh, well, you know, whatever, I guess.
And, you know, that kind of diminishes the respect for the game, I feel.
It really does. It destroys it. With what little we've had, guys like us, who are trying to keep the game going, guys like Chester Cove and Richie Myrick and all the guys down in Fico's with New England Candlepins, even Nuzzo and Madela at Palace, us at Classic Candlepins, you now here with the Alley Chat. There's a small group of us that are really trying to bring this into the 21st century, you know, with YouTube and podcasts and all this new stuff that they didn't have 20 years ago.
Right.
With what little guys like us have had to work with, what we have to work with, we're trying to maximize as much as possible and with as many of the guys as we possibly can. And I think a lot of it is, well, you know, we're not going to really bust this guy's balls because we really need him. Or we don't want to really make these people mad at us because he's in a real good clique of friends and we don't want all of them not coming to this or not looking at that. You know, it's almost like the more social media has come into it, the more that like things have gotten laxed because this particular group is more friends with this group and these guys are not with this and blah, blah, blah. You know, sometimes I wish the high school would just get out of this and we could all just grow up and just, you know, try to knock down more pins than each other, which is what it kind of was supposed to be when we were kids. That's what you wanted to do. You started up growing up wanting to beat your dad or something. And then you started beating your dad. Then you wanted to beat your buddies and all that. You know, and then now here we are 30 years later and we're pro bowlers. We go to the tournaments. We're on the TV shows and we're doing all this other good stuff. And a lot of us are
We're breaking world records.
Yes, we are. That was friggin' awesome.
We'll have more from Mark Ricci right after this.
Friday Pro League Rundown.
Hey everyone, this is Frank Face with your Friday Pro League Rundown. In Week 31, Academy 3, 4, Lucky Strike, 4, Central Park, 6, Metro 1, 2, Academy 1, 6, Malden, 2, 2, Riverwalk Lanes, 0, Ron's Ice Cream, 8, 20th Century Lanes, 6, Norwood, 2, Metro 2, 8, Woburn 1, 0, Academy 2, 6, Woburn 2, 2, and Malden 1 had the bye. This week's 400 series include John Winchell at 401, Mike McGann at 401, Chris Sacchetti 402, Jeff Surrett 402, Mark Gregory 407, Chris Beauvais 407, Steve Latch 417, and Chris Sargent had the high series at 420. Sean Sawyer of Woburn 2 had the week's high single at 172. Your standings are Lucky Strike 198, Academy 2 188, Central Park Lanes 185, Academy 3 171, in 5th place 20th Century Lanes at 158, Ron's Ice Cream at 145, Malden 1 139, Metro 2 138, 9th place is Academy 1 137, Riverwalk Lanes 120, Metro 1 107, Norwood 97, in 13th place Woburn 2 at 89, Malden 2 at 56, and Woburn 1 is at 46 points. Next week's matchups include Malden 2 at Academy 2, Lucky Strike Lanes at Academy 1, Metro 2 at Riverwalk Lanes, Woburn 2 at Norwood, Central Park Lanes at Academy 3, Metro 1 at Ron's Ice Cream, 20th Century Lanes at Malden 1, and Woburn 1 has the bye. This is Frank Face, and that's the Friday Pro League.
Alley Chat.
September 30th, 2011, I'll never forget it till the day I die, was the night I threw 519 for three strings in the Friday Pro League. It was amazing.
It doesn't count. It was at Metro.
Shut up. I knocked down 519 pins. And then my son got on the lane and knocked down the 520th. the only pin I left standing. I threw two shots at, couldn't hit it. My then 2-year-old son, Dominic, jumped down onto the lane, picked up one ball, threw it, and hit the damn 3-pin right in the face. Right in the face.
He's going to be better than you.
I hope to God so. And if
I'm serious. I
really hope so. As a dad, that's all I can hope for. You know, I don't want him to be compared to me. I don't want him any of that garbage. I mean, that's
He's way nicer than you.
He is.
He can't possibly be compared to you.
Well, he's not from Somerville, dude. I mean, that's right. That's the thing, you know. He can grow up and say, I'm from Amesbury.
Yeah,
he
drinks the Amesbury water.
My dad's a dick. He's from Somerville. No, that same night that I threw 519 in that third string of that match, my team, which at the time we were bowling out of Metro Bowl, it was Jim Putney, who was subbing for Chris Sargent that night. Sargent was normally on the team.
Oh, he didn't bowl that night.
Sargent was not there that night. I don't remember where. Which is funny, a little cross between Mark Ritchie and Chris Sargent's life. Before I owned Riverwalk, Chris Sargent owned Lafayette.
That's right.
Yeah. So, and it was that year, 2011, that he originally got Lafayette. So he had been there doing work and doing everything else, everything that we had to undo when we got there. But that particular night, he wasn't there. So we had Mark Gregory leading off for us. We had Joe Tavanese in the 2-hole. Jim Putney was bowling in the 3-hole. Dave Dupuy was in the 4-hole. And I was the anchor man, which was kind of cool. I was bowling with these guys, and I got to be the anchor man on them. They were letting the young guy do it.
Sure.
They did it before with Hodge, when Dave Hodge, who's now Dave Malahan, was bowling with them on that same Metro team. They were letting the young guy bowl anchor, and they were giving a young good bowler a shot to like shine against some of these guys. You know, they had already been there and done it, and they were letting some of the young guys have their chance.
And you don't see that very often now. I mean, so that's kind of humbling, I suppose.
It felt really, I can't tell you what it felt like to have those guys have that confidence in me to just say, go ahead, Marky, go get them.
And look what you did.
Yeah, it was a long day of going back and forth with Adi Gendro because we were bowling him that night, and he talked a lot of shit. He talked a lot of caca that day, and it was fun to have a match. He's a good buddy of mine, and you know, to his credit, he threw 400 that night. He threw 400 and lost by more than 110 pins.
Imagine that.
And tell me about it, right? You know, so if somebody did that to me, what do you do, man? You just go over, shake, tip cap, shake the guy's hand. It is what it is. But in the third game of that match, we went what is officially known as banana sandwich.
Okay.
We threw 814, as I said, between the five of us. Capped off basically by the two of us, Dave Dupuy and myself, in the 4 and the 5 hole. Dupa had a 196, and I had a 202 in the same game together.
I can't even imagine what that's like.
Frank, I can't even tell you what it was like to be there because I don't even remember being there. I just remember like hovering over the building in my mind going, this is the coolest freaking thing that I have ever been a part of in Candlepole. Yeah. This is amazing. Well, long story short, we throw 814, which is 11 pins higher than any other recorded team high single that we've ever heard of. And previously it was a team that was bowling out of Pilgrim Lanes, which is not an official record. It is very unofficial, but I have the scores and the newspaper article hanging up at Riverwalk if anybody's ever interested. Of the 803, it was Gary Carrington, Joe Ashline, Wally Basilinski, which is Brian's father, Brian, a guy, the other owner at Riverwalk.
Yep.
Mike Sargent
was on the team. Mike Sargent, thank you.
And Peter Flynn was
and the Peter Flynn. Yes, thank you very much. And they threw 803 in the first game. Yes, first game.
Wow.
And they went nuts. And it was crazy. That score was not sanctioned because apparently, I don't know, I wasn't there, I was very young, but apparently that score was not sanctioned because that match was filmed. Somebody taped it, so the rumor goes. So they said that there were different conditions because it was under videotape or whatever garbage. So regardless of that,
wasn't the triple sanction though, the 2067?
No, that's not even a record. It's 2167 is the triple.
Oh, okay.
They threw the 2167.
Well, I
think that is.
That is sanctioned, but the single string isn't.
Correct. Okay. Makes no sense, right?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Okay, exactly. So then we get to September 30th of 2011. We didn't threaten the series. We threw 2,063. So we were 104 shy. Tava had kind of a tough night that night.
Yeah.
But aside from Tava, Mark Gregory was Low Man that night at 4:53.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just put that into perspective. Like, yeah, that was absolutely friggin' ridiculous. Low Man at 4:53. Yeah. Besides Tab. But anyway, regardless, my 519 was sanctioned that night. Well, not that night, but a week later we reported that I threw the 519 on the exact same lanes that Chris Sargent's 245 was tied.
Yep.
And the same lanes that Matt Pankel had previously thrown 514. But that was not acknowledged because the record, the foul lights weren't working at that time. Mm-hmm. Well, they were working when I was bowling, and they were working when we were all bowling. My 519 was sanctioned about 2 weeks later, so I am officially the three-string world record holder, and I love every bit of it. It's all I've ever wanted ever since I was a kid. When I was bowling as a kid, I used to bowl at Lanes and Games in Cambridge, and they had the records poster up on the wall right next to lane one. And when I was bowling Lanes and Games in the teenage division, the teenagers bowled on 1-6. So it was really cool when you were on lane 1 and 2, you could go over and look at the records poster. And I remember being a little kid going, I'm getting on that board someday.
Nice.
Someday I'm getting on that board somehow, some way. And now I am. You know, it's really cool. I was 30 years old when it happened. I'm going to be 34 this year, but it's only a couple of years ago. Well, so my 519 is sanctioned. Well, we also petitioned not long later to have the 814 sanctioned. And after much deliberation and a long time of waiting, I found out 2 weeks ago that they chose not to sanction our team's 814, because we apparently did not report it in time.
So this happened the same night that you threw the 519?
The exact same night. It was the same string. Mark Gregory our first bowler, Mark Gregory, had a 155. Joe Tavanese had a really tough game. He had a 105. Now, put this all into perspective in the end of this, and then imagine we did 814 with a man who struggled and had a tough game. Sure. And threw 105, we do 814. That could have been 850 if he was on, but he was just having a tough night. Joe was going through a lot at that time with his knees, and it felt really bad. Nobody was more determined than Joe Tav.
Of course.
To come with us and just kick ass with us. Nobody was more determined. And the poor guy just couldn't make the pins fall over that night. I felt so bad. We all did. We all wanted him to come with us, but he had a really tough night. But, Gregory had the 153. Tava had 105. Jimmy Putt had 155. Something very close to these numbers. The only thing I know for fact was Tav is 105 and Dupa throws the 196 and I throw the 202 in the same damn game. He threw a double a couple times. We went back and forth. He threw a double, looks at me and goes, yeah, come on, kid. Let's go beat that. And so I throw the double.
Of course.
And I go, come on, old guy. Let's go beat that. You know, so it was funny. We were like ribbing each other the whole damn game and it kept it so loose and so just fluid that like, we forgot we were bowling a match. You know, we forgot that we were even going for points. We forgot that we were even doing this. We saw what we were doing as a five-man team.
Yeah.
And we were just trying to make the damn roof come down. We were trying to knock over just so many pins that there would have been nothing that anybody anywhere could have done to come catch us.
No, it's never been done before. Well,
814 has never been done before.
Right.
No. And the ICBA chose not to acknowledge it. Not very happy about that. It is what it is. I do think that some things need to change at the ICBA if they want the game to grow, if they want to increase some new participation, things like this. A statue of time that you have to report something, I guess you'd say, needs to, like, there are things that need to change. Because if on the exact same night that 519 was sanctioned, 814 needs to be sanctioned because you had the score sheet in your hand. You saw it. Just because I didn't say the words to you doesn't mean that you can't read the numbers.
Sure.
And apparently that's what happened and it is what it is. But if that's the case, then look out because I'm going to be on a team that throws 815 one of these days. And then there's not going to be anything that they can do.
And you're going to call the next day.
I am not going to call anything. I am going to show up at somebody's house with the score sheet. So records are important. To the bowlers who throw them. Records are very, very important. They don't get set very often. So if somebody does throw some massive number or some team throws a massive number or even if it's just a state record, man, if you get up on the state record board, that's your name in print up on the wall.
Yeah.
And not everybody gets to see their name on the wall, especially not of our generation. Not yet, anyway. There's very few of us who have our names on the wall for anything, male or female. So when one of us does this, this means a lot. Because we grew up watching, wow, that's Gary Carrington. He's got two teams world records. That's sick.
Yeah.
Wow, that's Jeff Atkins. He's got the high triple world record. Which is funny, after I threw 519, he reached out and sent me an email and said, congratulations, Mark, and everything else, which I thought was really, really cool.
What did he have previously for the record?
514.
14, okay.
He had, it was 514, which nobody ever thought that'd be touched.
Yeah.
There's something about those lanes at Metro. Yeah. I don't know what it is. You can ask anybody who's bowled on them. There's just something about them that makes them Candyland.
Yeah, they fly.
Yeah.
They absolutely but fly.
It's something I'll always be proud of. I have the score sheet at home that says my team threw 814.
Of course, yeah.
And I had never been a part of a big 2000 series like that. I've been a part of 2000, you know, team throws 2020, which is really good.
Yeah.
Never anything. Never even thought about what it takes for a team to throw 2050. You know, five guys going at least 410 each.
Yeah, it's incredible.
That's sick bowling. Yeah. Like, that's ridiculous.
Well, you know, to touch upon what you said, you know, you said you're unhappy with the ICBA.
Just about that.
Yeah, of course.
Let me clarify that. I do think that they are going in the right direction, especially with Liz and Scott Moore coming in as bowlers.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I've always been under the philosophy, for lack of a better word, that candlepin bowling itself, for the survival of the game, should not be run by candlepin bowlers. But, you know, and my example for that is if you look at like something like the PGA Tour, obviously we don't have anywhere even close to what kind of money they have.
Right.
PGA is a business, international business with, you know, top executives, people who know how to write rules, keep records, all this stuff, you know, type of stuff, standardize the game as much as they possibly can. We don't have that choice. I mean, we are bowlers. It's a small audience, small group, whatever you want to call it.
Community. Really. We are a small community.
Exactly. And that's a perfect word, Mark, is community. So I think, you know, in my eyes, I'm very optimistic with Liz and Scott Moore. They're doing the best they can, as far as I can see. I think, you know, there's bright things to come. You know, look at the banquet she put together for the Hall of Fame.
That was awesome.
Fantastic.
All three of us were there.
Yeah.
That was amazing. They did such a good job with organizing and everything else. I wish Liz was a little more at the forefront. I wish she was introduced more.
I agree.
I wish she got a chance to speak her and Scott. I wish Ralph had introduced them instead of saying, oh, and look at these great programs that Liz and Scott made. How about a hand for the colored books?
Right, because like, I believe there was a lot more to it than the
you're
tickets and the
damn color. Straight.
You know, Liz, she's doing a great job.
I think so too.
And she comes from the game. Right. So does Scott.
Right. Yeah. And not just comes from the game, but comes from like our era.
Exactly.
Of the game.
Exactly.
Where it's not the era when some of the other people in the ICBA grew up. Things have changed dramatically.
She's experienced the cancellation of the Channel 5 show.
Yeah.
The absence of the WNDS shows. The lack of what the game used to be.
The fall of the WCBC.
Yeah, right. All that type of stuff.
Which was sin. It was an absolute sin.
So the way I look at it is, you know, records aside and stuff, that whatever happened. But
right. That's not now. What happened with that does not reflect entire judgment on the ICBA to whether or not they're good or bad because they didn't sanction a record. That's not what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, there's many more aspects to the ICBA than
completely and utterly. But this is something that it had a way of being like an olive branch almost to be extended to me and my own bowling alley.
Sure.
Because we had been in talks about the ICBA and joining and seeing what they could offer us, what we could do for them. And then to hear this happen this way, it just kind of made me go, well, okay, until I see a difference, until I feel like, because as an owner, not only am I looking out for the best interest of my bowling alley, I'm looking out for what my bowling alley can do for the game as well. You know, we've hosted women's pro tours before. We've hosted, you know, we host classic candlepins now. And I'm looking for whatever. I mean, I know I only have an 8-lane bowling alley, but I'm willing to offer it to anybody who's interested in coming to a bowling alley to have a good time. I mean, you guys know exactly what I'm talking about.
Sure, of course.
So if it comes to any more than what we can do for the ICBA, then I will do whatever we can. But if it comes down to, well, we're not gonna scratch your back, but you are gonna scratch out. No, I'm not. And that's how I took this as.
Okay.
So that's my own personal feeling on it. But I do think that the ICBA does have to prove that they're in process of changing the way they do things in order to promote the game again. Cause that's one thing that has been lost. They've done a good job at making rules. They've done a good job at like keeping the state tournaments going. But I remember being a kid watching the bowling show and you saw commercials for bowling.
Oh yeah.
You saw that, you saw commercials about your local bowling center,
yep,
and kids bowling Candlepin. I cannot remember the last time I saw anything that had to do with Candlepin bowling on a commercial on a television network, except for Robbie Taylor and Shu. What those guys did.
Oh man.
They cannot be patted on the back enough,
right,
for getting Candlepins for kids. And now what they call the Candlepin new generation on NESN with the ICBA support.
Yep.
And that is something that if the ICBA is smart, they'll stay on for years and years and years, whatever the budget may be, because without those kids coming in, we're the last of it. And there won't be anything to the extent of what it could be.
No.
You need to get the kids interested. You need to somehow get the kids off the damn smartphones, off the laptops, and into a bowling alley exercising and having a good time.
Right.
Right.
It needs to be promoted more than just, you know, bowl a game for free every day during the summer.
Right.
Kids bowl free. Like, that's a great promotion, but you need to do something that entices them to just do more, walk in and throw balls.
Of course.
You know, let there be points that they can accrue by their scores. And then at the end, they can choose through a small catalog and pick some prizes that are bowling related, mugs, t-shirts, you know, a hat or something. You know, if they started and they raised their average 5 pins in the month of August, then they're entitled to $30 off a set of bowling balls, a Paramount or something. You know, get them interested and offer them something that will continue to make them interested. Not just, oh yeah, well, we can go bowling again today.
Right.
We can go bowling again today. It's a good start. It's a good start, but there's more that needs to be done. And I think that the longer and the longer things stay the same, the more things are going to get worse. And we don't want to see that. That's why we're doing things like this right now.
Sure, sure.
That's why we're running Alley Chat. That's why we're running Classic Candlepins. That's why the boys are doing New England Candlepins.
Yeah.
Freshie's doing the Knockout. I mean, everybody's trying to do their part now.
Right.
Everybody's trying to do their part.
Yeah, I mean, within what? Even just the last, 365 days, 1 year.
Yep.
There's been such a push.
Yep.
Of you know, our small community, like you were saying.
Right.
Podcast, three TV shows right now.
Right, three.
You know, like, there's obviously a want for it, a need for it.
And it's all by the bowlers.
Exactly.
The bowlers have done all of it.
Exactly.
Right.
Without the support.
Imagine if there was some kind of administrative support, some kind of financial support.
It would be amazing.
From the governing body.
Right.
Of Camp and Bowling.
Right. But their situations have not taken into account the way things are now. Things are, and I'm not 100%, but I've seen numbers, I've seen papers, and it's not changing in the direction that it needs to yet. Maybe they're onto something. I don't know, but we'll see. I wish them well. I hope they do the best that they possibly can.
Of course.
But if it's business as usual, I wish them luck.
It just amazes me that there's no, from what I understand in discussion with the Pro Series guys, there's no backing from them, no financial backing, no real support. They don't, I mean, it's kind of an anomaly to me. The Worlds is the biggest tournament we have.
They don't want any part of it.
And it's not even sanctioned. It's not Correct. Even mentioned.
Correct.
You know,
if records are broken during the Worlds, they don't count. It's not a sanctioned tournament.
I'm going to intentionally foul.
It's not a sanctioned league. Right. So just intentionally foul all you want, Richie. I won't call it on you. I don't want to make you mad.
Well, I mean, one thing I want to touch upon is from the houses that I go into, you clearly have the most passionate open bowlers I've ever seen.
Well,
the people.
Riverwalk?
Oh, yeah, yes. For sure.
The
for
people
sure.
that come in. When they come in after a hard day's work and they just start to throw, you can see how much fun they're having and how they want to be there. We've been in a number of alleys. I feel like I go to other places and there's people open bowling and it looks like they could give a crap less. And they're just, you know, killing time, doing whatever.
Yeah.
The people at Riverwalk are there to bowl, and it's awesome. It's awesome to see.
We've got some guys who, ever since we've opened, they've looked at it totally different. Yeah. It is a complete polar opposite of Leo Super Bowl, which is the other major bowling alley in Amesbury, as everybody else knows. It's just an absolute polar opposite. Leo's is, I have no problem with Leo's. I would take my boy bowling there all day. And my boy does bowl there on Saturdays. He bowls for Leo's on their kids leagues teams.
Probably and he tears that place up.
He does. He does.
Place is lightning.
It is. It really, I have not thrown a ball there personally in like 12 years from the first time I lived in Amesbury a long, long time ago. I used to bowl there in leagues. And even then, the place was electric boogie, woogie, woogie. Now I watch some of the kids bowling at Leo's on Saturday mornings. Yeah. And my God, if you cannot keep the pins from falling.
Yeah, down. I know.
It's, but in a way that's good because it's not like they just went down there and took a 55 gallon drum of Lane oil and just kind of like poured syrup on their waffles. You know what I mean? It's dry. It's just
set
to score. The whole pit and everything about the way where the pins are is just set up to let the average bowler walk in and just knock down a ton of pins, to say nothing about when pro bowlers walk in there.
The thing that I when I did the kids event, the thing that
I wish I made it to that, man.
The thing that I can say about that is that Leo's is the best house that if you hit a shot, like you know how to hit it, you're looking at the triangle. You put it, it goes. You don't get screwed at Leo's. It's the most honest. Like if you put the ball where you're supposed to, if you have two and one and you're like, if I put it in that pocket, the head pin's going to hit the 10 pin and I'm going to take out the two. You hit it and it goes.
Right.
You do it at other places and somehow you miss.
Right.
And it just happens that they go at Leo's. I mean, you do get a lot of mixing action, which helps.
Well, right. There's, as I said,
but if you put it in the area, yes.
In that pit with the synthetics, the curtains are at specs. I mean, everything is at spec.
Yeah.
There is no play. Everything is at the tightest or the closest or the exactly where it needs to be.
Yep.
And when you do that, you get happy bowlers because they like knocking pins over.
Right. More importantly, when they hit the shot correctly, it goes. That's the important thing.
Right.
When you know, if you're hitting shots and they're not going, people are going to get frustrated. I know they want to see a number up there, and I agree with you. If you can throw 100, that's the number you want to shoot for if you're not a pro bowler, you know.
No, pretty much, yeah.
You know.
Exactly.
And you can get it at Leo's.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you go to other houses that you hit it where it should go and it doesn't go, and people aren't going to come back. It's just for some reason it works there, and I don't know the physics. Like, I just I felt really pleased that I put it where it needed to go and the shots went.
And they will there. Yeah. I mean, the averages are pretty good there. I talked to a bunch of guys who do bowl there and who come over to Riverwalk a lot, a couple of, you know, my buddies. And they say that they really do enjoy it over there. They also said they can't wait for Riverwalk to get a league too, you know?
Right.
So we're trying to start a league at the same time. All the other bowlers are happy to be there, but they'd also be interested to come over to Riverwalk at the same time. So really what's actually happening is, now they finally have a choice. And it's not a matter of we're trying to steal their bowlers, because we're not
right
at all. But we're giving people a choice now. And we've gotten Riverwalk to the point where you walk in and the pins fall.
Right.
It's not the old Lafayette where you had to throw a hand grenade to, you know, maybe punch a spread eagle or something. You know what I mean? Like now you can throw a good ball and get rewarded with a good shot.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a little quirkiness, of course. You can't get rid of all of it.
Right.
But all in all, the pins fall well. So we get a good response. As far as our open bowling goes, my God, some of the people who come walking in, they come in and they just, it feels like 1947. They kind of lose themselves. They don't feel like they have to be watched or anything like that. And like the big bowling alleys, I found a lot of people come up to me and they say they're intimidated. When they walk in, there's so many lanes and there's so many people. They feel like they're being judged or watched. I never understood that until I stepped behind the counter and started listening to more customers. And now I get it, where they may feel like other people are watching them and judging them and how they're bowling or whatnot. I never gave a crap if anybody liked how I bowled or not, but not everybody feels that way.
Right.
So,
of course, yeah.
Yeah. So other people may say, oh, well, I don't want people to watch, or because I'm going to get intimidated and all the other. So they come walking in the Riverwalk where there's only eight lanes. And half the people, 5 minutes after they walk in, they're half in the bag anyway. Because, you know, they either come in half in the bag or they get the, you know, really, really inexpensive drinks at the Lafayette Club. They do a really good job running that bar in there. And they've been nothing but awesome to us is ever since the first, very beginning of all of this. Everything's been great. But, yeah, it's, you know, I don't know how the people at Leo's feel about it. But all I know is that at Riverwalk, we are not trying to, like, steal customers or do anything. We're just giving people a choice. And they're seeing that there's much love being put back into the building now.
Yeah.
You know, that there was much love for years, but I don't know. I can't speak for people. I don't know what happened. But when we got there, we saw a bowling alley that hadn't been loved in a long, long, long time.
Sure.
So all we decided to do was just put some fresh love, some fresh blood into what we were trying to do. And anybody who walks in sees and who had seen Lafayette from before knows the difference, regardless.
Absolutely. And I mean, what you were saying about choice, I think the, I don't know if it's competition that you're presenting with the Amesbury, but the choice or
it is
the
now.
Yeah.
It wasn't a few months ago.
The
but
competition
is
good for the business, for the game.
It's keeping us on our toes.
Yeah. You know, so
I know that I don't speak for Leo's because they run their business much, much differently than we do.
Sure.
But it's almost like the Monday Night Wars. Remember with the wrestling? First, there was WWE,
yep.
You know, the big, huge conglomerate, which, you know, is kind of like Leo's. They're a big corporation, yep. You know. And then here came this tiny little WCW. And as we are, here came Riverwalk Lanes, this tiny little thing. And for the longest time, nobody watched WCW. Nobody cared. Everybody was watching WWE. And then something just happened. With WCW, it was the NWO. As soon as Hogan and Savage and Diesel and Razor Ramon or Scott Hall and Kevin, as soon as that started to happen, everything was cool. It's starting to happen at Riverwalk. A lot of people are starting to come back. We have a lot more repeat customers than we did last year.
Leo's doesn't have a world record holder there.
No, they don't. Yeah, I love hearing it. Thank you, Richie. Thank you. You are really, really, really like the coolest dude in the world to me right now. Thank you very much. Cool. But no, we just want to give people a chance to see what happens when pro bowlers who get a chance to do this the right way, do it the right way. And so far we're doing, I mean, knock on wood, as I knock on my forehead again, knock on wood, we're doing it the right way.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you very much.
That's clearly exhibited between your open bowling, between your renovations of the place, between your damn TV show. I mean, it's incredible.
Thank you.
This is what we...
And within 2 years of opening.
Right.
We've not even been open 2 years yet.
Yeah.
As Riverwalk, anyway.
Sure. Of course. Yeah. And you're running, you know, 10 stringers and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know the Tony Baldinelli 10 stringer is coming up, isn't it?
It is. At the end of April, early May. April 25th, 26th.
Okay.
2 and 5 p.m. And then the same thing on May 2nd, which is a Saturday. I believe that's 1 and 6, but I'll have to check that. You can check the Facebook page for Riverwalk Lanes for that. Check either Facebook for Riverwalk, Facebook for Classic Candlepins. You'll see all the information of all the tournaments that we're doing. We're not doing it to make $1 million. We're doing it to give the people what they've asked for. The Pro Bowlers want tournaments. They want good tournaments. They want good money.
Yep.
And that's what we're trying to give back. Not necessarily like the Pro Series is, like once a month kind of ones.
Sure.
But we understand that not everybody can just drive to Amesbury once a month.
Of course. I get it.
I completely get it. I know the parking at my bowling alley sucks. I know that. It's something we're working on big time to see what we can finagle or anything. But it's something we're trying to fix. We're trying to get done. But this is just everything that we've ever wanted to do. So when you're putting so much love into it, it has no choice but to bleed for
you. To prosper, yeah.
And that's what happened. That's what's happening. And thank you guys for letting me come on here and just say a few words about the show. And,
of course.
You know, talk about a bunch of stuff I had to get off my chest and everything else. I really appreciate it. It was fun to sit here and banter with you guys for the last, 4 hours. This has been awesome. This has been really, really cool.
It's never enough.
No, I could sit here till 4 a.m. and talk about bowling, and I know you could too.
Yep.
Exactly. We could sit here until we ran out of data in this computer.
Folks, that's Mark Ricci. He's the current world record holder of a high triple series, 519 and 2013 world singles knockout champion.
Oh, stop it.
is a proprietor of the game, runs Riverwalk Lanes in Amesbury, Mass. Go check him out. He also runs a TV show out of his lanes. We are all a part of that. Classic Candle Pins. And we have a great ladder coming up. This past weekend we did a taping, and you will not want to miss it. So
no, watch this next ladder coming up. If you've watched the show before and you've seen a few of the shows and gone, this really isn't so good, you know, give this next 4 weeks a shot.
Yeah, this will change your opinion.
Give this next 4 weeks a shot. We're not giving anything away. Who wins? Who loses? I'm not telling you anything, but just watch.
I can corroborate that.
Yes.
So,
did you just say I can crap on that?
Corroborate that.
Oh, corroborate that.
I can corroborate.
Oh, okay. I thought you said you were going to crap on that.
Like, No.
Let's all collaborate and listen.
Collaborate and listen. Ice is back on a brand new invention. Something grabs a hold of me. Oh, shit. All right. Never mind. I could sing that whole song, but I won't. I promise. I need more coffee.
Next time. Next podcast.
Yes. Next, Vanilla Ice. Next time we have Robert Van Winkle in here.
There you go. Okay, folks. From my co-host, Rich Lamoni and Kyle Bruce, and thank you very much for Mark Ricci.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, guys. This was awesome.
My name is Frank Face. Thanks for listening to Alley Chat.
Face.